With no further ado,
question. That morning meeting you were talking about at 7 o'clock?
Yes.
It said Eastern Standard Time.
Well, there's two. There's two meetings. There's an Eastern Standard Time meeting, and there is a West Coast 7 a.m. Pacific Time meeting. And then on Sundays, they're too early, unless you feel like I have to leave them every once in a while. They're at 5:30 in the morning. But they're really wonderful topics. If you go to vision3u.info, you'll see topics on everything. Oh, and mission and Ruth and that really phenomenal talk you did. Ruth Dent is going to be leading our Big Book workshop at the birthday party.
Thank you.
So we're really good, and we're trying to continue for next year. And he's another wonderful speaker. And I think that's it. With no further ado, get back to Seth.
Yeah.
Okay, we're trying to do it here. Okay, so we're going to just adjust this a little bit. So, welcome back.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's on my boots. Sorry.
A gorilla bit.
Okay.
It's a guy thing.
I could have answered that, but I'm sure.
Okay, how's that? So I'm still Stephanie and some folks over here. And so we're going to pick this back up on page XXVIII. We're going to pick it up there. And before we start reading this, I just want to say this is one of my favorite pages in the doctor's opinion, because we're going to really dig into why we compulsively overeat. So I'm just going to pick it up right here. Okay, so we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcohol is a manifestation of an allergy. And when they say chronic alcoholics, or we can say chronic compulsive overeaters, those are people like me who my entire life, I don't want to say how old I am, I'm pretty old, have had a problem with compulsive overeating. I've tried diets, I've tried exercise programs, I've tried fencing, I've tried everything out there. I ate candies at my mom's first when I was a little girl. I tried everything, and I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop overeating. I am a chronic compulsive overeater, okay? The phenomenon of craving is limited to this class, people like me, and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And I was talking to Jeff on the break, and we were talking about the sober eating workshop that they do, and we were talking about really, really knowing what those alcohol, if you want to call them alcoholic foods, whatever you want to call them. You know, like I said, for me, it's white flour, it's sugar, it's quantity of any kind. Okay, so I weigh and measure everything that goes in my mouth, I weigh and measure. I don't eat something if sugar is in the top 5 ingredients. I just don't. I read labels on anything. Okay, because I am not willing to kick off that physical allergy. Okay, I'm not willing to do it because I know where it leads me. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon being human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Has anyone had that experience? Right? I'm binging all day long. I worked in the food business for 25 years. Okay? I started getting high on my own spot. Like, I was going from restaurant to restaurant. And I'd walk in and go, oh, I'm going to check the food today. And I check their food. Oh, you know what? I'm going to take some of this home for so-and-so. And then I'd go to the next restaurant, and I would do the same thing. Okay? I ate all day long. I couldn't even focus at work anymore. I was a mess. My problems had piled up, and I was at the end of my rope. Faulty emotional appeal seldom suffices. Okay, how many times did my mother say to me, I'll buy you a whole new wardrobe if you lose weight? My father would say to me, men don't like fat girls. Okay? You're never going to find a husband if you're chunky. You know, that was the thing. He'd pinch my, you know, and walk by, oh, you're getting chunky. You know? It doesn't matter what anyone said to me. The message which could interest an these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. And that depth and weight they're talking about is for the recovered compulsive overeater to sit down with a newcomer or someone struggling to tell their story. Because I don't know about you, but when I hear someone's story about how they recovered, when I listen to Charles tell his story, or I hear his teacher tell their story, that has depth and weight to me. You know, they were once like me, and now they're living free. So in nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. Okay? So, when I was coming out of relapse, I knew I was at the end of my rope, but I knew there had to be something. I didn't even know if I believed in God anymore, and I tell my hair car God. I'm like, I don't know who you are, I don't know what you are, I don't know where you are, I don't even know if you're there, but there has to be. My first prayer was, I don't know, there has to be something you can do for me. And I was just dumb. And that power has recreated my life in an amazing way, actually. So if any feel that a psychiatrist directing a hospital for alcoholics may appear somewhat sentimental, and this paragraph really talks about, and I'm not going to read the whole paragraph because I really want to get into the next one. I could spend hours on the next one. This next paragraph, I mean, can you imagine what it felt like for these doctors and these psychiatrists trying to help these hopeless alcoholics who weren't recovering? You know, as John alluded to, I work in this field now, and I watch people in this disease, not only in food, but in the other disease, and, you know, I can't imagine what a doctor who's relying on medical science only, what that must feel like. These guys, they couldn't help the alcoholics, and that was because this is a spiritual malady that requires a spiritual solution. So, I always ask, you know, why can't I stop? You know, if any of you have been in relapse in this room, I had a head full of a big book, and I had a belly full of food, and I used to call people. What are you doing? How do you do it? What meetings do you go to? What sponsor do you have? What food plan do you have? What? Please help me. Please help me. I wanted like a bottle of recovery I could drink. You know, this would cure me. You know, come in, come on, please. You know, we have a meeting that when they say the other part of the book when they talk about science, and I'll go, oh, science, because you know they're waiting for that magic pill. That magic pill is not here. So, I think, you know, why can't I stop? This next paragraph in masterly detail tells me why I eat. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I eat because I have no coping skills. I don't know how to do life. Food isn't my problem. Food is my solution. You know, I always hear Harlan do that. And that's my experience. Food isn't a problem until I stop eating. Then food is a problem. Because now I get to feel. I have to deal with life. I have to deal with the wreckage that I've caused. I compulsively overeat because I don't know how to deal with life on life's terms. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the truth from the false. My compulsive overeating stupor, my compulsive overeating life is the only life I can imagine. And then, you know, I'll share something really embarrassing. So I was in relapse, and I had done a podcast the year before, and, you know, I've been in OA for 14 years, and someone asked me this question, are you really a compulsive overeater? Are you anorexic? You know, you look like you're a healthy body size. My top weight's 250 pounds. I've lost and gained 100 pounds multiple times. You know, I have scars, the skin. I have skin on my legs. You know, I have the scars of being a 250-pound woman multiple times. So, yeah, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I listened to a podcast of myself and relapse because I couldn't believe I had ever been abstinent. Okay? I couldn't believe I had ever lived free of that obsession because my life got so small that my life became, you know, I live with a compulsive overeater. I want to eat in front of her. So my weekend consisted of going to the grocery store, buying all the crap, all my binge foods, and ice cream. And you know, it's really hard to eat ice cream bars. Like six, there's like 8 and a half. And I remember I shoved my mouth, they wouldn't melt all over me as I'm sitting in the car. I couldn't put them in the freezer. And I would sit in my car for 8 to 10 hours on a Saturday, binging and reading, you know, anyone read the outline of the book? I came into that world with my business all day long. And there were a couple times I had to call my husband crying and saying, I can't leave the parking lot. Can you come help me? And he had to come help me. And he had to help me get rid of the crap in my car so I could come home. And that's what my life had become. I couldn't imagine my life being anything else. So I had no idea what was real and what wasn't real anymore. And that's what, you know, when I came at a critical level of compulsive overeater, the disease will kill me. The disease almost killed me, and it will kill me if I don't do these things. And that's just my experience. And your experience could be different, but that's my experience. So to them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. So when I put down the food and I don't have a spiritual solution, I'm irritable, I'm restless, I don't want my husband to talk to me, but then if he doesn't talk to me, I'm mad at him because he doesn't. And it's like, I am a walking, oozing ball of self-pity and hate and anger. Okay? No one wants to be around me. I'm irritable, I'm restless. My husband's smiling because he lived with it. sorry. He wants me to say yes. That was the only, I mean, the irritability, the restlessness. And so, you know, how could I not pick up? And I have so much compassion for people in the food and people in relapse. I do. Because I wanted desperately, desperately, desperately to stop. But I wanted desperately, desperately, desperately to keep eating. And it wasn't until the pain of eating was a little bit worse than the pain of not eating that I hit that bottom. So after this becomes the desire again, so here we look at this cycle, right? I don't want to eat, I'm never going to eat again. 2 days later, I'm feeling better, a little bit better. Oh God, I should stop by that store, I should get this, or man, but what does it taste like? Oh, that's really good. And all I'm doing is this constant chatter in my head, constant chatter. And then I get it, and I eat it. And within 30 seconds of eating it, you bitch. You badass. Look what you did again. I can't believe you. I'm sorry. Sorry, people listening, I'm not doing my work. But you piece of shit. How did you do this to yourself again? That same voice that said, oh, it's going to be really good. You know, you have to have it. Turns on me and tells me that I'm the biggest piece of crap that ever walked the face of the earth. And then I can't stop. And I'm crying, you know, I'm crying and eating. I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, I can't stop, you know. My MO was chocolate stains all over my shirt, ice cream, you know. And then my body's getting bigger and bigger. Because I gained 70 pounds back of the 125 I lost when I first got here. And my body's getting bigger, and people at work are looking at me, you know. And I worked for a vegan fast casual restaurant contest, where it was all about health, and I was an executive. I was an executive at that company, and my boss, the CEO, used to say to me, you gotta watch your weight. business, you know, this is a lifestyle brand. We have to look a certain way. How can we be, you know? And I kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I was over 200 pounds again, and he used to look at me with disgust. So after they succumb to the desire again, as so many do, when the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass to the wellness phase, but it's free and we're new and remorseful. I'm never going to do it again. Who said that in the term? Never again! And I mean it when I say it. That's the scary thing. I mean it when I say it. I believe myself. Because I can't differentiate between the true and the false. I believe that I don't want to do this. I believe I'm not going to do it. And this is repeated over and over and over again. Unless the person can experience an entire psychic change. And that entire psychic change, I have to have a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening. So the same, but a little different. I need to have that spiritual awakening, that slow and steady awakening and connection and surrender and change by the power of greater me. And like Carlin always said, done to me, not by me, done for me by that power. And I can't change myself. I can change myself into any word here today. And I can't change it. I can't stop this disease, you know, because it takes over all of my being, everything I am, everything I want. It takes everything away. It robs me. Steals from me. So I need that psychic change, that psychic shift. I need a power greater than me to do that for me. So, any questions? I need to end this to low note.
There are a lot of people in that disorder, and I'm not getting rid of them. And if you are recovered, if you can be in it. If you are recovered, why do you still need to weigh in? The alcohol is going up. The constant, I have amnesia, and I'm taking literally 1 second to get from there and pick up again. But if you're saying, talk about spiritual recovery, if you are spiritually recovered, you're only spiritually recovered, why do you not pick up? Why do you not get to the end of your
life? So the question was, the question was, if you are recovered and you are spiritually awakened and spiritually connected, why can't you eat like someone else? Because being recovered is not the same as being cured. Okay, I'll never be cured. I'm a compulsive overeater, that will never change. Okay? I can't. You know, I always think of, you know, God's not going to do for me what I, you know, can do for myself. Vice versa, I think I said that backwards. But I believe that my higher power would have me weigh and measure my food and take care of everything else for me. Okay? In weighing and measuring, I'm given a tremendous amount of freedom. I don't worry that I didn't get enough. I don't worry that I had too much. I don't worry that, you know, and I go about my day. So, I don't know if that answers your question. That's just how it works for me. I don't know if Charles wants to also put you on that.
Page 85, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. This is one day at a time. I don't care how recovered I think I am. I don't care if I'm Mother Teresa. The rent is due every day on recovery. And if you don't pay that rent, you will be spiritually evicted, which means you will be physically damaged after you're spiritually evicted.
You're so awesome, Charles.
There was something that I want to say there. Somebody who's a person who's a doctor can stay away from the doctor for a long time. If they know what the reaction is to when they eat the doctor, you know, they can probably die. The airway is closed. You know, and the allergy that I had in my body is the same. I need to be covered by staying away from it, doing the work, you know,
it's really well set up. I'll just repeat that real quick for the tape that, you know, it's like having an allergy to strawberries, right? And I'm okay if I don't eat the strawberries, but when they do, I have an allergic reaction. It's very similar to that. And did I capture it? Is this it? Jeff?
Earlier in the page, you talked about the feeling of restlessness, irritability, and discontent that comes over us when we see people doing what we can do with this community. So my question is, do you guys ever have a reaction when you see people eating food that you can't eat that would go for the restless, irritable, and discontent, and if you do, what is, you know, how do you manage those feelings?
The exception since October 31st of 2015, that moment I prayed, I don't know, which is a miracle. I'm never resentful that I can't eat something, but I will say, there's always new food, but cool stuff, and sometimes I go, I wonder what that tastes like. Or, you know, but I have a 13-month-old grandson, and he eats regular food, and I get sugary stuff on my fingers as I'm helping feed him or I'm cleaning him up, and I never think about looking at or eating it or what would it take. You know, it's a non-issue. It's really a non-issue for me. That irritable restlessness, it's gone for me. As long as, like Charles said, one day at a time, as long as I do this work and I stay spiritually connected and I work these steps. I've worked the steps a few times over the last 3 years, and I just finished another round of working the steps. But what is important for me, and what keeps 3 steps at bay, is working 10 through 12. They're not maintenance steps. They're spiritual growth steps. So every day, I work step 10, I work step 11, and I sponsor and work step 12. And that's what keeps me growing spiritually and getting closer to my higher power. So that's my experience. Charles, do you get irritable about food?
That's a good question. You covered that where it says they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can experience dissension, ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks that which we see others take with impunity. If you have impunity towards those things, you're not covered.
Well, it's sort of a question, but I know that I've heard a lot more in program now about people abstaining from sugar and white flour. And yet I've heard occasionally people who say that they can eat anything. And so there's really no, I mean, it's kind of right. Is it just across the board people kind of choose what they can say? From, like, you know, for me it's sugar, it's not white flour. But definitely, when my sponsor always says, you know, that's you.
That used to piss me off. I used to sit in meetings and hear people say, oh, what the question was, what about if, you know, if she can't eat sugar and someone else says they can, and someone else can eat quantity and someone else can't. I used to sit in meetings and I used to get pissed. Okay, I'd be like, what do you mean you just have cookies and you're okay? Don't you see that? Why can't I do that? You know, and it really pissed me off until I realized that we're, you know, the person sitting next to me in this room, their disease may be a little different than mine is. I'm a firm believer that entire abstinence is the only solution, okay, for me, and it tells me this in this book, and I think for a lot of us it is the only solution. And it also tells us in the book there are different types of compulsive overeaters, right? Well, it doesn't say that. It says there's the moderate, and the real deal. And I believe, and this won't be popular to say, but I'm going to say it. I'm going to take from the disruptor of chief over here, and I'm going to say it. There are people that know who are not compulsive overeaters. I believe that. There are people who are in OA who are the moderate, or they don't have the disease like I have. And so I have to remember that, and I have to remember what I need. All right, so I'm going to turn it over to Charles.
Yeah, I hear taking a tiger out of the cage three times, that's frothy. It's frothy. It's frothy. Well, alcoholics, I hear all that. Alcoholics can't drink, yeah, they drink water. They drink juice. They just don't drink alcohol. Compulsive overeaters, they eat. Some have snacks. It ain't 301, sometimes it's not 301 with a compulsive overeater. Sometimes some compulsive overeaters have different situations where maybe they're bulimically exercise bulimia? Maybe they, you know what I mean? Everybody's got a different case. If I'm in your head, I'm out of my mind. Why am I worried about, oh, well, if they're doing good, why can't... That is frothy. And I know Stephanie dealt with that already. You know, so I'm going to deal with... On this page, psychic change is mentioned three times on page XXVII. The phenomenon, I want to talk about the phenomenon of craving. Phenomenon being a rare, unusual craving. It's a craving beyond my mental control. It's physical. It's an appearance, which is a manifestation, is an appearance. So, as I said before, I didn't tell y'all that I was a crackhead. I can't smoke a little crack and work these steps. I can't smoke a 50 and have a psychic change. And I'm not going to get pregnant. No way I'm going to get pregnant. Ain't no way.
Yeah.
But, stop it. But, it's either you're, and Steph's going to deal with that, it's either you're pregnant or you're not pregnant. We've heard that, right? So I want to address this phenomenon of craving. It's a craving beyond my mental control that I have to physically have it. Can I tell you one more thing? God ain't coming from heaven to slap the food out your mouth. It's not going to happen. I can't do it. Many want to stop, but won't stop. You got to stop. Nobody's going to help you stop. Newsflash. If someone mentions pancake and you go to IHOP, that's on you. Stop all this frothy. Oh, they said pancakes, or they had a picture of that, and I went to... That's frothy. Come on, you had an ulterior motive to go. You just wait for somebody to say pancakes, so you go after pancakes. Let's keep it official here. That's frothy. You're going to blame it on a picture? Also, when you go to the supermarket, you just don't go down that frozen. You know what I mean? Like, you can't hide from it. The big book says, in working with others, even an Eskimo might show up with a bottle of Henny. No, I didn't say that. You get me? You can't hide it. If you shield it, you're going to have a bigger explosion. You are. And I agree with, but one thing I do agree with in early recovery, don't go to a barbershop if you want to be a rasta. Because you won't get a haircut. You won't cut your dreads off. Don't go to a barbershop if you're on shaky grounds and you don't want to cut your hair. Because you will cut your hair. A real compulsive overeater has no choice. Right? The phenomenon of craving, they're biologically mandated to pick up their binge foods. You can't help it. I can't help it. If I could get 90 days, I would not be here at an OA workshop right now on my own. That's the problem. And Steph is going to deal with that debate that we have in Overeaters Anonymous. Oh, I can do it. I'm different. They don't know my story. They don't know where I've been. All those excuses, right? My good friend from Chirac always says, you ain't finna be sprinkled with pixie dust. Y'all know who that is. You know, you're not gonna get sprinkled being recovered. And recovered don't mean that I don't have problems. Recovered means that we have a way out, which is one of the words that the big book was going to be named, a way out. If you study this text, you will read it all through the big book, especially the first 164 pages. We have a way out. There is a solution. Right? Well, many of us, let me go to that page, because I know we're reading Doc's opinion, but we gotta drop it. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of our shortcomings, which the process requires for successful consummation. I'm just gonna read that. We don't want to do the work. I'm sorry that you're not getting results from the work that you're not doing. I'm really sorry. How you gonna get the psychic change? We humanly cannot produce that psychic change. This psychic change comes from a power source. Let me give you this example. This is a step two example. My phone is drained. I don't know how anybody in here that's drained. If I connect my cell phone, it'll get some power. Why don't you connect yourself to a power source? But in order to get connected to a power source, you must be at ground zero. In order to realize that your life is unmanageable, you must be at ground zero. There's no other way to do it, right? So the psychic change, it says on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. There's always a condition. You know, this big book, to me, has five things. I'm probably going to botch it up, but I know it has warnings, promises, prayers, conditions, and questions. Five things. And this is a promise. If you ask something greater than yourself, some power source, to set aside everything you think you know about your recovery, your addiction, for a new experience, try that. Because we hear all these excuses, I can't get the psychic change. You can if you want it bad enough. We hear on the line as well, all actions are born in thought. We hear that, right? All emotions are born in thought too. All emotions. Because you get the thought, you get the emotion, and you act out negatively or positively. That's a fact. You can't go around that. You know, nobody can stop you from recovering except for yourself. How bad do you want it? How free do you want to be? Right? So I want to tell you, this is good. Men have cried out to me in sincere, and watching the time too, because you know compulsive overeaters want that lunch time. That's real. All right, good looking. All right, so, that's a New York term. All right, so, men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal. Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. How much of us says, you know, I want you to repeat this again. I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm good enough.
I'm good enough.
And I'm worth it. Come on, say it like you mean it. I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm good enough.
I'm good enough.
And I'm worth it.
I'm worth it.
You know why I want you to say that twice? Because this is going to hurt right here. I must stop, but I cannot. Anybody in the room is saying that today? Stop speaking that over your life. I must stop, but I cannot. Who gonna stop you then? Negatively or positively? You want to recover? Who gonna stop you? Somebody answer that. Who's gonna stop you from recovering?
Me.
Who's going to help you recover? How can he help you if you're in the way? Get out the way. Set aside. Say that set aside prayer. You know, we believe in prayers, right? Everybody believe in prayers? Prayers without action is begging. You can pray for a job all you want. Don't fill out that application, and I'm going to wait to see if you get that job. Fill out the application with your prayer request. Admit to yourself that you are going to recover no matter what. Pray it and put action into it. Hopefully you guys are working on it, on that question. And at the same time, I could suggest that you put down your binge foods and binge ingredients in answering that question. Because if you're not doing that, you're fooling yourself. Yes, ma'am.
I have a real problem with that when it comes to potatoes, because potato chips and french fries and all those are super huge binge foods. However, if I go to somebody's house and they serve me a nice meal and there's a half a baked potato on my plate and I don't put a whole ton of stuff on it, I don't have any kind of allergic reaction. I eat it for the meal. I don't start thinking about it.
So what you saying? Okay, so what is, so you can't eat?
I'm trying to figure out if I should put it on my binge food list or not.
Trying to figure out what would you
eat? Do I put potatoes on when they're prepared certain ways they trigger me and other ways they don't?
Okay, so she's saying, for the record, she's saying she's asking if she's wondering if she should put
potatoes
on her binge food list. Because it's depending on how it's prepared.
Whether or not I get triggered.
Okay. So, do you get triggered sometimes?
From the non... I don't think that happened, no. If it's not deep fried or...
Could I ask you something?
Yeah.
Why are you even talking about it?
Yeah. Well, because I'm trying to figure out if it belongs to my binge list or not.
If you talk about it, in my suggestion, put it on. Well, I mean, if it ain't a problem, I talk about crackers. Crackers a problem.
Yeah. I understand.
This is the season calendar of debate, right? Oh, you know, if they compare like this, it's not wrong. Why are you talking about it? And I'm not trying to be, you know what I mean? I'm trying to free you, and I'm trying to piss you off at the same time. Why are you even mentioning it? If it's not a problem.
Because sometimes I get it. It depends if whether it's a problem or not. That's why.
But if you mention it, it's got to be some type of problem.
Certain times are, yeah.
Okay. So just chew on that. Yes, sir.
Is it worth the risk? That's a good question.
All right. Think about that during the break. Yes.
I agree. And what you say, but you say about that, trying to meet that on how it's shared and whether or not I've been in touch. So there's some proof that I can't eat alone. But when I'm sitting with others at the table and I'm feeling love, then I eat less and I don't feel like I'm sure. So it's the same thing.
What's the question?
The question is, I'm wondering if you've had any experience. So, I don't want to compare it to crap. Experience with doing things with eating or doing something alone as opposed to doing it with other people.
So, the question is, have I had any problem doing crap? But doing it alone or doing it with other people, I didn't want to do it with other people because I wanted more for me. That's my answer. Yes, ma'am.
I guess the question is, how do you get the psyche to change?
How do you get the psyche to change is the question. There's three answers. You want me to give it to you?
Yeah.
Recover. Say it again, bro.
Recover.
There you go. Any more questions? Yes, ma'am.
I had a problem that I wrote down. My food, my dentist, like pizza, for example, and she told me I had to break it down into ingredients. So she said, okay, the ingredients are pizza, pepperoni, whatever, and she said, I can't eat any of those. And I don't have a problem with tomato sauce, but it felt like everything put together, so she said I wasn't after it. But I don't eat pizza, but I do eat like spaghetti sauce. And it's not a problem. But
so what's the question? Is it the actual thing that all the ingredients put together, or is it?
Because they say your best food and ingredients don't get the end ingredient.
Well, that's a good question. So the question is it the actual item, or is it the ingredients that make the item, right, that you're allergic to? Lori C., my man from Winnipeg, Canada, he has a special edition dealing with that, and I'll get that for you before 4 o'clock. He always says that you should look at your ingredients, your ingredients and the food, because, you know, he made this analogy of, you know, it may not be the bagel, but it may be the cream cheese you put on the bagel. For me, it wasn't the French fries. It was the ketchup and the French fries. So guess what? To answer your question, I'm getting high right now. To answer your question, if it's the ketchup on the French fries, I'm giving them both to God. Here you go. I can't deal with it. You know what I mean? Why fight it? Why play Russian roulette? Good.
Hey, going back to your crack analogy,
yeah.
I'm drinking booze and I'm getting drunk and I'm smoking crack. Do I give up one and not the other? How is that different? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That analogy can work.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's more like, I feel like this is going to be different when I'm at a table and I'm eating love, because I do not know and see the love and see the love. But there's a correlation between what you feel like you the toughness of the meal.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Are you fighting with abstinence right now?
I think I'm being a little soft.
Are you fighting with abstinence right now? Can I challenge you to really work on your binge food and binge ingredients list and get free today? This is good. These questions are good. Get free today. No more excuses. Go ahead. I think we're going to lunch in a couple minutes again.
What if there are foods that you can eat out when it's prepared in a small portion, when you have those same foods at home you cannot control? Is that an allergic food, or is it just something you need to not bring home?
I'm going to have Stephanie answer this before she does. I'm gonna answer your question from the doctor's opinion. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Yes,
my experience with that is like playing Russian roulette. Maybe this time it's okay because I'm meeting with people. Maybe next time it won't. I'm not willing to take that chance today. And to what Charles said, I love what you said. Just get free today. You know? Yeah. I don't have anything in my, I don't need anything that, there's nothing in my plan today that I could eat. How do I want to say this? It's black and white for me. It's clear. There's no gray area. There's no something I can eat out with people, but I can't eat it alone. It's clear. It's what it is. I can eat these certain things, and I can't eat these things. I just wouldn't take a chance. That's fine.
All right, real quick, before I answer any more questions, I just want to get down to, because we want to keep this thing going. So, it says, faced with this problem, if a doctor's honest with himself, he must sometimes feel his own inadequacy. Although he gets all that is in him, it is often not enough. One feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the essential type of change. We physicians must admit that we have made little impression upon the problem as a whole. Many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. He's talking about you got to be physically 100% abstinent to the best of your ability. It's not just, you can't get to the psychic change without dealing with the physical allergy. Every single day, accidentally, while working these steps quickly to get that psychic change. That's why we're having all these issues. We're not willing to get 100% abstinent. We're not willing to be honest with ourselves. And we're not willing to submit to authority. And the authority is the disease. And then we come to OA and complain about not doing what we said we were going to do. Right? And real quick, I'm going to answer questions, but so it says, I have had many men who, for example, worked on a period of months on some problem or business deal, which was to be settled on a certain date favorably to them. We had some things going on that we couldn't do because the food and other ingredients was blocking us, right? This is Bill W. He was going on a business venture with Hank P. in New Jersey. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving became paramount to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were drinking, these women were not drinking to escape, they were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. Like I said before, you're biologically mandated to pick it up. And I want to answer those questions. I think we still have 5 minutes. Okay, yes, ma'am.
The question is, in that moment, when you talk about not being able to work through the fact that you're responsible for whatever until they are accident, and there's that moment where you're trying to get accident and like you take the blood, you want more, and you have, there's like bottom-line power, but I kind of know if you've ever gone through your mom's recovery, what did you do in those moments? Because that's the only thing I have left. I did all the tools left. In those moments, when you feel biologically mandated to take it up, what did you do? What did you do?
I did three things. It means that I was desperate and I followed the instructions of a recovered sponsor. That's what it means to me.
It's a really good question because I lived that in relapse. I totally get it. Is that what you're experiencing right now? I'm sorry for your pain because it sucks. So Charles is right. Recover, recover, recover. What we learned in the day of, so first of all, I've got to go to my higher power. I pray. It's the first place I go. I pray. And I was taught that. I don't go to my sponsor first. I don't make a call first. I go to my higher power and say, you know, please help me. It also tells us multiple times in the big book. Think about if you read Bill's story. Bill's in the hotel lobby. He's like, I want a drink. Look at all. They're having so much fun in that bar. And Bill says, I got two options. I can go into the bar and have a drink, or I can go find someone to help. And for me, the only way out of my head is to go be of service to someone else. And so I pray and I look for someone to help. And it's funny, because when I find someone to help, I feel better afterwards. That's the best. I mean, I wish there was a formula and I could say, do A, B, C, D, E, and F, you know? But that's what's worked for me.
Thank you. Anybody? One more question, real quick.
Is there an official definition of abstinence in OA?
Yeah. It is?
There is.
Abstinence is refraining from all binge foods and binge ingredients while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight and working the 12 steps of overeating anonymous. That is the official definition of abstinence. Go ahead. What is it?
I am
Nancy.
Nancy.
our chapter, for example, has anybody get a hold of an old gray sheet? Absence is defined, and recovery is defined, not just the state of the culture of overseeing, but the state
Right. I missed the behavior part.
In other words, it can be absent as far as footprint, which has a lot to do with how you act. In other words, the shape in your head, and feeling that somebody's hurt to pay your babysitter and your teen company. That does not mean you're not a teen company. But that's a whole thing to think about. This has a lot to do with you. So I'm sitting here today, and this thing is writing and taking care of it. It's just thinking, and then you're going to go. So that's just a thought from the
Thank you. First of all, thanks to Charles and Stephanie.
Yeah.
And thanks to John and Jackson.
Yeah.
Also, thank you to all of you, actually.
Yeah.
A personal thank you. I'm struggling. Thank you, but now this is doing all for us. Yeah, so John's gonna save my ass right now.